Well, some big budget news this week. The Senate has approved its version. Any major changes from the House version?
Well, there were some changes. Whether or not they're major is up for discussion. I spoke to House Speaker Greg Stumbo this morning. He qualified that, of course, he hasn't dug through the whole bill. I mean, the actual bill right here on the table, flipping through it, it looks like it's 220 pages. And the Senate didn't even pass that until nearly 8 o'clock last night. But he did happen to get a briefing document that kind of says what some of the differences are. The Senate did do some changes. They reduced even more debt than what the House did, about $161 million more or less debt. That's almost $600 million more than what the governor had. They cut out $7.5 million extra the governor had for preschool to expand that. But they kept other programs, the colon cancer program, the expansion of social workers that the governor called for. They did take out the UPike compromise, that scholar Appalachian scholarship. But Speaker Stumbo didn't even seem very concerned about that this morning. He said that, you know, he figured that was a bargaining chip and they're going to start conference committee on Monday. And he said that, you know, there was no doubt that they wouldn't finish in time for them to pass the budget on time this session, which is probably a minor miracle in and of itself if you've been following along for the last decade.
And I guess one big difference is this budget did not assume a revenue from casino gambling that the governor had cleverly put in the last time.
Exactly, and since it didn't have any gambling revenues, you know, obviously, you know, when the governor did that, the House basically had to build the budget from scratch, something they haven't had to do before. So, you know, they didn't have to build this one from scratch. They could look at the governor's proposal, tweak it a little bit. The Senate could look at both proposals, look at, you know, the 2010 proposal and the 08 budget and you know, tweak it from there. And it seems like everyone's just going to, I don't want to say go along, but they act like it's going to be no problem at all to pass this budget, mainly because there's not a lot of money. I mean, they're cutting most extra programs, and there's not a lot of other money to spend. You know, you can't fund a lot of new programs. You can't fund any big increase. You know, you can't do anything big. They're just struggling to fund what they currently have. So when it's something like that, as long as people don't get creative, it's usually pretty easy for lawmakers to pass a budget.
What's the status of the proposal to, for lack of a better term, regulate pseudoephedrine, the ingredient found in cold medicine?
That's been sitting in the House. It's ready to go in the House. It's got its readings. You know, I think the compromise, the 7.2 grams a month limit, is something the House can pass. They just haven't done it yet. And Speaker Stumbo said this morning that they may actually, what might happen is the Senate, which has the House Bill 4, which is the prescription pill bill that Stumbo has been pushing, they might actually just put the pseudoephedrine language into that bill and really make it a comprehensive catch-all for all these drug-related bills. I mean, don't forget, we also have one that's dealing with synthetic drugs. They might throw that one in there, and in that way, they can do what they've done with education. When you talk about education reforms, everyone says Senate Bill 1, Senate Bill 1, Senate Bill 1. And if they throw the pseudoephedrine issue and the prescription pill issue and the synthetic drug issue all in one bill, then they can go on and say, a few years down the road, we really put a dent in our drug problem here in Kentucky with House Bill 4, House Bill 4. So my guess is that's kind of the track that they're going to go. On Monday, the Senate Judiciary Committee is expected to take up House Bill 4. And so you could see it come in that way. But the House isn't going to change it anymore. If it passes, it's going to be that 7.2 limit. It's going to be, I think it's modified as much as it's going to be modified, unless they throw a few of the issues in there together. And then that would be a future modification they could make.
You also reported on what's called the Young Mayor's Bill. This would lower the age eligibility to run for local office?
That's right. Representative Adam Koenig, who's from Northern Kentucky, has a bill that would allow 18-year-olds to run for city council and 21-year-olds to run for mayor. That's about a roughly 3 to 5 year decrease in the current eligibility age. And Koenig makes an argument that a lot of people make when they talk about lowering any eligibility to 18 or 21, and that is, you know, at 18 years old, you have to sign up for their armed services, you're allowed to vote, you can buy lottery tickets and cigarettes. You're given a lot of responsibility at 18. You're pretty much not a child anymore. And if you're not a child anymore and you can vote, then you ought to be able to run and affect that change in person. Instead of just voting for people to kind of make the decisions for you, if you want to, you ought to be able to run yourself for a local council seat. And the same thing with the mayors. Originally, he had mayor down to 18, but there were some questions about, well, in some cases, mayors appoint like local ABC officials, alcohol beverage control officials, and, you know, have some control over that. And can a 19-year-old really make decisions about alcohol and beverage issues? So they moved that to 21, but the same thing applies. At 21, you can buy beer, you can buy alcohol. You know, surely you could run a city, because it's not like you're the only guy doing the job. There's usually city managers. There's usually a city council to double check you. There's usually checks and balances in place that your local kid can't just go wild and blow the city budget at the casino.
Also, there was, from the very young to the very old, a bill has been proposed that would end Confederate pensions.
That's correct. That's another bill by Representative Koenig. And the argument is kind of opposite on that. It's kind of, well, it's been about 50 years since anyone in Kentucky, any Confederate widows or definitely Confederate soldiers, have drawn a Confederate soldier pension. So it might be time to get rid of this pension program. Lawmakers had a little bit of fun with this because it's kind of a no-brainer to do this from an economic standpoint. No one's drawing from it. No one's taking money out of it. There's no money in it. Obviously, there might be some people who are upset, you know, with the symbolism of it. But Koenig says that not a lot of people have come to him and said that they're against this idea. And so that's just a few steps from becoming law. You know, it would, the Senate, full Senate has to pass it. It needs the governor's signature. But basically, it would rid all of that. And lawmakers had a little bit of fun with it, saying, are you sure this isn't a premature bill? Have you posted a public notice to make sure that no one could draw this? Have you double-checked?
And who knew it existed, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, Kenny Colston covers the State House and the Kentucky General Assembly for Kentucky Public Radio. Kenny, thanks for joining us, and have a good weekend.
You too. Thanks for having me.